And we have wired down that. They had a prosecution in Monroe County not long ago on one of those.
On one what?
Oh, somebody set up a spring gun to kill his wife, boyfriend, or something.
Handgun means a firearm having a barrel less than 12 inches in length.
So that is in fact defined here.
Explain to me, I'll call this morning. Sawed off shotgun, couldn't be charged, and he couldn't, he wasn't convicted of this. But I think that's a antiquated measure.
Well.
12 inches.
We separately prohibit possessing a machine gun or a sawed off shotgun. That's separately prohibited, that's deadly possession in the first degree.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry I started this whole.
You ready for the question? 11, 12, and 13.
Questions?
Call roll.
Ed Burns.
Aye.
Kinderman.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Dernstead.
No.
Johnson.
Aye, I guess.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Scared me there until Johnson chimed in. John Burns is answering a little more hesitantly each time.
Section 14.
What's the grading committee's?
Huh?
Grading committee, what recommendation?
Project director has.
All right, then what project director?
Violation.
No, beginning with section 14, possession of a deadly weapon in the third degree, class C misdemeanor.
Maybe we could just.
Go ahead.
We could do the law of what?
Sure. Okay. Section 15, possession of a deadly weapon in the second degree, class B misdemeanor. Section 16, possession of a deadly weapon in the third, in the first degree, class C felon.
I move we approve.
Why would you tell us?
Only have. What is it only? No, I beg your pardon.
Yes, sir.
17.
17, carrying a concealed weapon in the second degree, class B misdemeanor. 18, carrying concealed weapon, first degree, class A misdemeanor. Illegal traffic and deadly weapons, class B misdemeanor. Now that may sound a little low at first, but you'll see that those people, you could get them otherwise, I think, for the higher.
19 is a B misdemeanor?
Yeah.
What was, 18?
18 was an A misdemeanor.
What was 18? 18 is A?
Yeah. Section 20, illegal use of firearms, class A misdemeanor. Section 21, failing to comply with firearm permit or handgun registration requirements, violation. Illegal, 22, illegal traffic and destructive devices, class C felony. Section 23, defacing a firearm, class A misdemeanor. 24, furnishing explosives to a minor, class A misdemeanor.
I move we approve the recommendations of the imminent project director.
I would move to amend the motion by inserting section 14A and B, the dates January 1, 1972.
Won't those dates be, won't those dates be governed by the date of passage, if it passes?
Well, you can make it an effective date.
in any case, the effective date is...
That date there is 180 days after the effective date.
Yes, I know it, and I'm giving the state police time to gear up, and the legislature time to appropriate the money and all that sort of stuff.
And people time to become familiar with the law.
Time to become familiar with it.
When did you make it, January 1st, '72?
Huh?
When did you make it, what date period?
January 1st, '72.
Yes, sir.
That's the earliest practical date that you can...
And then will the repealer be attached to this? The repealer for the present chapter 166?
Yes. Well, it would repeal certain parts of it. It would repeal sections 166, 210 through...
I think you run into a technical problem with legislative council then, because the loose leaf parts will come out in the fall of 71.
Hopefully.
And,
They do that. We do that in a lot of acts, John. It should be active.
Did you do it in the probate code this year? Which doesn't become effective until July of...
Yeah, the repealer would be 166210 through 166520.
Do we expect the whole new criminal code to go into effect, say, the 90 days after the session? Or don't you think they probably would put some date like January the 1st?
I think they would.
They probably
will.
I think they would want to defer it,
72 or something like that, when the...
Probably the same thing, yeah, like the probate code.
And so that the 180 days might not even have time to pass before that date, January 1st.
All right, then I
leave it blank to become the effective date of the code.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I would move to amend section 21, sub D, 21, sub 1, sub D, to change 10 days to 30 days to conform to our earlier action. We have to get rid of the gun.
Yeah.
Within 10 days, we change it to 30, and so the change should be the same here. 21.1b, page 34. Because we give them 30 days to get rid of it, and this simply makes it a crime not to get rid of it within that time, so we have to be consistent.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Or no?
Aye.
Carried.
That's the motion as amended.
Yes. No, this is to amend the section 21. To make it 30 instead of 10 days.
Section approved. 14
through
24.
24. You reaffirm the motion that I made.
Motion is to approve section 14 through 24 as amended. Call the roll.
Fishburne.
Aye.
Sindgren.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Dernstedt.
No.
Johnson.
What are we moving on to?
This is the standard stuff, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of
aye.
Nine.
Aye.
Young.
Nope.
Mr. Chairman.
No. Section 25.
Well, then Bob, why don't you approve the rest?
What change?
Why don't you move that?
This is section 25 contains, among others, what is known as provision to assist the producers of Paint Your Wagon and other such local commercial ventures of interest to those in Eastern Oregon, because it provides a defense for a motion picture or television studio which uses destructive devices in connection with filming motion pictures. In other words, they wouldn't be subject to prosecution simply because they're shooting guns on a movie set.
Would they have a permit?
We thought, no, they don't need a permit.
Why not?
We thought that would be appropriate consideration to extend to Representative Young from Baker County.
How much of an organization would you have to have? Jim, how much of an organization would you have to have before you come under that exemption?
Well, you know, it'd be like Woodstock or something like that.
Are you talking about three C?
No, we're talking about five C.
Five C. Well, I'm a little bothered about three C.
Oh, it's good stuff. So we need the Minutemen?
Duly authorized. Who is the due authorizer?
Somebody should determine that.
Give you the right to set your business for cable.
Make your right to Florida.
This is a, this, as I recall, was up for the discussion. This is a, an area in which we rely upon the Benton and other county prosecutors to exercise appropriate discretion.
Oh, well, I'm asking.
But what about, insurance policy?
Or something, and leave out Lane and Marion County.
Wow, frankly, we don't have a very good answer to the objection raised. We simply recognize that if it's American Legion Parade or something like that, okay.
How about a Minutemen calls today, have captains and lieutenants, sergeants?
I'm not gonna kid you, we don't have a good answer for you, man.
You see, then you run into the problem of drawing out exemptions to your exemptions,
yeah.
And who do you exclude and who don't you exclude? The man, well, the man, and who else are you gonna put in? If we were trying to put some sort of sentence in there that would show what the legislative intent was here.
They can want that in.
I hope we approve sections 25 and 30.
You've heard the motion. Any further discussion? Call roll.
Jeff Burns.
Aye.
Kendra Burns.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Carr.
Aye.
Jernstedt.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No. Carry.
We approve section 28 as amended.
Article 28. The discussion, the motion is on approving the entire article as amended.
I want to debate this, Mr. Chairman.
Very well, Mr. Johnson.
Because I really feel that I'm going to convince a lot of people, but I will decline.
Please don't. Any other discussion?
First.
Call roll on approval of the entire article as amended.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
You just have to raise your hand too.
No, I'm just stretching.
Oh. Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Jernstedt.
No.
Johnson.
No.
Knight.
Aye.
Young.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
No.
Chairman, I changed my vote to aye for purposes of reconsideration.
You really want to do that?
Yes, and I would like it referred to the minutes.
All right. Mr. Chairman. Having voted on the prevailing side, I give notice that I may move to reconsider, providing somebody wants to pray and vote on that first agreement.
I'd be willing to make that deal now.
I knew I'd get there. All right, Don, what else do we have?
Well, the next item on the agenda is preliminary article. It's article one, and it's tentative draft number one. I've taken the liberty of calling it tentative draft, although this article as a total entity has not been through a subcommittee. Some of it has been approved, however. And
I'll do section one.
If you'll look at your last red tab, it's your third red tab in the back of your book.
I think the record of the minutes ought to show that by a vote of 64, we voted to commend the subcommittee for its fine work on Article 28. 5-4, or whatever the vote.
I don't think you'll get 5 votes on that one.
Now, section one, on page one of this draft, is a short title. Now, this is optional with us, so we don't have to have a short title if we don't want to, but I felt that because of the size...
Well, it's optional.
All right.
You're going to call us the Attorney Code?
Good deal.
It's the Oregon Criminal Code of 1971.
Section 28. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Those opposed?
I need to vote aye.
Is that okay?
Yeah. Sheldon, it passed.
Oh, really?
And you folks are back in it now.
Back in the mainstream.
Section two, purposes and principles of construction, was approved at one time by the commission. We had, the makeup of the commission was different at that time, however, but this particular section has been approved, which might want to take another look at it, because it says what our objectives are in this code.
Well, I think the initial commission decision was an early life one, right, a little bit of protection.
I'll buy that. All of them. Oh, wait a minute, he wasn't even hurried to study some of those other things, he did it now. Senator Burton?
I just wanted this real strict construction that we threw out. I thought we always wanted it.
Isn't that thrown out of the code presently?
Yeah.
Presently, the criminal code says it's a real strict construction.
Yeah, 16105.
Question?
All of them in favor say aye.
Aye.
Carry.
All right, section three, general definitions. Now, these definitions have been approved by the commission. Now, I wanted to bring up one related matter in connection with this. Now, at the time we approved this, we recognized that it was kind of a problem of the chicken or the egg, because we may have, we knew then we might have later definitions that were used more than once in our code that we might want to move over here. And we do have such definitions that we have since used that are not just general definitions. So the reason I bring it up is so that I can be authorized by the commission, staff may, to make the necessary internal changes to move definitions from one place to another, so long as they stay in the code, if it appears that we can avoid repeating them unnecessarily. Well, yeah, the way it is now, that term would apply to any article in our draft.
Any questions?
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All right, three. Section four is a matter we've discussed in the past, both in subcommittee and in the commission, about the question of where the burden of proof lies with offenses. This has been drafted to attempt to articulate that and to denote the distinction between an affirmative defense and straight defense. And the affirmative defense, wherever we've used that term, instead of going ahead and say the defendant has the burden of proof, we could eliminate that and just say it's an affirmative defense. He would have the burden by preponderance. Otherwise, if it just is a straight defense, for example, such as self-defense, he would raise the defense, but the burden would be on the state, just as it is now.
Just, Don, in that regard, is the word trial sufficiently exhaustive? I wonder if there was, if the code would have applicability in proceedings other than trials. Well, it doesn't occur to me at the moment, but
the only places we've used the terms is in connection with our crimes. And,
presumably be a trial.
Yeah.
I just raised it. I just wondered if it would.
At what point does the trial process start?
That's a good question, isn't it?
Well, I just wondered if it would be useful to say, let's say, throw in trial or proceeding.
Leading the ocean, that wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, but of course you don't get into the question. That may be be done.
I think trial is what we're concerned with.
Right. Before we vote on that, did we actually vote to approve section 3?
Yes.
Oh, that was a motion?
You were distracted.
No, I wasn't distracted. The question came up, his authority to move them around.
I'd be distracted too.
All right, we've approved that. Section 4, any further discussion other than Burns' interruption?
No, we approved.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carry.
Chairman?
Section, yes.
We go to the last tab, but we leave the names Burns, Chandler, Clark.
No objection, so ordered.
Could I just raise a question before I leave? Back on section 3.
3?
Yeah, the definition of regarding dangerous and deadly weapons. Back in State versus Godfrey was decided firearm had to have a ball and powder in it before it became a dangerous weapon. The fact that it was loaded you had to have a ball and powder in it, it would be a dangerous weapon, a deadly weapon. Today you've got the question of the different types of weapons. I think I brought this up originally for back when, where you have it in the chamber, but it's not in where it could be fired. And at least we've had rulings that this doesn't come, that this is not a loaded firearm. It doesn't come within the definition of a deadly weapon. And I think we should have somewhere in the commentary that a revolver that has a bullet in one of the in firing line is a loaded weapon, and a rifle or a shotgun that has it in the whatever you call it, chamber magazine, all you need to do is flip the lever and it's ready to fire, should be considered a loaded weapon and deadly.
Well, I think because the way we've defined these terms, Frank, I don't think it's going to make that much difference.
It would be bad
because dangerous weapon.
An operative gun is always a deadly weapon.
Well,
no,
it's
only if it's loaded. Only if it's loaded is it deadly.
Not, no.
I read it.
Well, you read the commentary, we follow the rule that it's got to be loaded before it's deadly.
Well, that's my recollection. I think that's right.
And question is, I won't really argue that an unloaded rifle is not a deadly weapon unless it's used as a club. But what I'm saying is that if it's got one in the magazine where all you got to do is pump it, or all you got to do is run the lever and you got a shell in there, then by gosh, that is loaded. You don't have to, tamp the powder in and put the ball in. So if the guy's got time to run out of firing range today, a person all he has to do is flip that lever. And this should be considered to be loaded weapon.
Look at the commentary on page 8. It says the requirement of present capability to resolve the problem of unloaded gun.
Chandler, couldn't you stay in California?
Go back now.
Oh, I don't want you to go back now.
This warning's work that I really want to. I was afraid to get to it yesterday. That's why I rushed up.
If it's specifically designed for causing death or serious physical injury, which is certainly a revolver would be, and presently capable, and if you had a weapon.
As State versus Godfrey said, Godfrey says it's got to be loaded. It's got to have the ball and powder in there ready upon the pull of the trigger to fire before it's presently capable of causing death. Well, that's why I feel we should have something that really makes it clear that we mean that a shell in the magazine or...
Well, it wouldn't be presently capable of causing death or serious physical injury if
there wasn't a shell in the chamber with that spring point.
All it requires is just a flick of a lever, though. You see, and it is.
That's right.
See, in State versus Godfrey, they had, you know, you had to tamp the powder, put the ball in and stuff. The guy had plenty of time to run out of range while the guy was loading it.
But Frank isn't that really just kind of a matter of, I can't imagine the corporate saying, probably fast loading guns has got a shot chamber.
Yes.
Well, I've had it. I've had it cool that way.
Well, if you have, then I think it ought to be in there.
Well, there aren't cases that say that.
Well, if State versus Godfrey says it, you see. Yeah, you've got to have the powder and ball in there so that all you have to do is pull the trigger to have the thing fire. So that if you don't have that shell isn't up there in front of the firing pin, under State versus Godfrey, it's not a dangerous weapon. Not a deadly weapon.
Well, the trouble is, though, Frank, is that State versus Godfrey in all the Oregon cases and several of the Oregon statutes have used those terms, dangerous and deadly weapon, interchangeably. Whereas we don't. We're defining them separately and distinguishing between the two. And where it becomes important is in the case of the armed robbery, where we've made a first degree if they're armed with it, not just, you know, or first degree burglary, not that they use it. We've made a first degree if they use a dangerous weapon in first degree, but if they're armed with a deadly weapon. So we've drawn a distinction between the two, which I think is important to do. And that way you avoid, I would think, the kind of problems you had in Godfrey and some of these, because these terms have been bandied about, and we're trying to distinguish between the two.
Well, and but of course, an unarmed gun, of course, isn't armed.
It's a dangerous weapon,
but not a deadly weapon.
Under our definition, it's a dangerous weapon, but it's not a deadly weapon.
No, because it's unloaded, it's not readily capable of causing death.
That's right.
It's certainly readily capable of causing serious
death. But it's not presently capable, and there's a distinction, and I would think that the one with the shell in the chamber would be a deadly weapon, but one with a shell in the magazine, but not in the chamber, would be a dangerous weapon.
And one unloaded is equally dangerous.
An unloaded one.
It's dangerous under our definition, right?
This then means
presumption. Yeah, you still got the presumption that it's loaded. This doesn't disturb that.
Here's my problem. Is that a guy points a rifle at you, assaults you with it. He's either assaulting you with a deadly weapon or just pointing a firearm at you. And the difference is whether that bullet is up there ready to be fired or who's got to pull the lever. And I feel that when all it requires is the pull of the lever, that it shouldn't make any difference whether that bullet is up there or not.
Mr. Chairman, when I go back to San Francisco, I'm going to take it tonight with me.
No?
No.
Well, do you have a specific suggestion, Frank? How we
Yeah, I would like to have it put just simply in the commentary that we consider a firearm that has the bullets in the magazine, if that's the proper term, where all it takes is a pump action or a pull lever to put it up in firing position, and we consider that to be loaded.
We consider that as coming within our definition of deadly weapon because it's presently capable of causing death or serious physical injury.
I change it, and I agree now.
All right, will you?
Well, excuse me, let me make sure. Uh-oh. What you're saying is that if there's
how we had it.
There's a bullet in the magazine. That still doesn't mean presently capable, does it?
Well, it will under our commentary in the way we intend to interpret it.
Aren't we then fuzzing up the distinction that we've tried to draw between the two?
What about the revolver, which has an empty chamber?
No, because you're saying then that you're defining an unloaded weapon as one that doesn't have a shell in any place.
Right. It doesn't require just the pumping like of a shotgun or the lever action of a
one that has no shells in it any place. But do we anymore, we don't use the term unloaded weapon.
Well, for practical purposes, if I had my 20-gauge shotgun sitting in the nothing in the dog gun chamber, but there isn't a magazine, and I want to shoot him, I could do this in one motion.
Yeah.
And I could, that thing could be just as deadly sitting there in the magazine as it is in the chamber.
And I think, even without the commentary, frankly, although I'm more than happy to put it in, I think that is presently capable of causing death or serious injury under our definition. It's presently capable.
Is that doggone shotgun? Is that a brand name?
Seriously. Yeah.
All right, Judge Burns, is this, are you satisfied that we remove the fuzziness?
I withdraw whatever I said and whatever objections, if any, I had made to Frank Knight's discussion.
He withdraws his objection to fuzziness.
Don Clark, don't be too much offended.
All right, put that in the commentary. Not that.
Back to the old commentary. No, but there is some very good commentary there already on this.
There's been a lot of good commentary. Section 5.
Mr. Chairman, I have some to say. Can I say it with a straight face?
Well,
depends on what you're
going to say. It's facetious, no.
It isn't facetious.
Yes, very well.
We passed this and we passed Section 6, then presumably we're going to be finished, presumably at least, and I just want to compliment the staff, and particularly, well, nobody in particular, but I think, I've never been engaged in anything where we've had such an effective and dedicated amount of staff work, and I don't think there's ever been an experience or a legislative, if you want to call it interim committee, I don't know, I don't consider this that, but commission of this type where we've had such dedicated and outstanding member participation. And I think, for example, on my subcommittee, we go back now nearly 4 years, and I'm actually getting to the point where I like to see Janice fall ahead. But the inconveniences that people have gone through, you particularly, Mr. Chairman, with the distances you've come, and I just think it's tremendous. It's been very rewarding for me, and I think the record should reflect these thoughts. I mean,
everyone concurs.
Well, on behalf of the staff, we thank you for those kind words, and I think certainly that includes Professor Plant. You know, we've had extremely good cooperation and teamwork from the entire commission on this, and of course, the proof of this thing is going to be what happens in the legislature. Hopefully, it will all go well.
We won't measure Article 28 against that proof either.
No, it's submitted separately. Well, now, aside from our mutual admiration statements, what are we going to do with Section 5?
Who do we approve? Question.
All in favor of Section 5 say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Other limitations. Section 6.
Well, may I better explain this a little bit? It's really to make it clear that, except in those instances where we've made specific provisions, that criminal procedure is governed otherwise. In other words, assuming this is going to be approved while we still have some of our old procedural code, that would govern. And does not affect any military jurisdiction or acts by court martials and whatnot, nor does it bar, suspend, or affect any civil rights, rights to damages, or forfeiture, or other remedy authorized by law in a civil action.
Nor does it inhibit the speedy procedures of student court.
Well, sub two, or sub two, kind of used to that, the federal district court, Elk River gas station, in case the state doesn't have any authority anyway.
And these are taken from the...
New York and Michigan.
Except for sub-4, and that's from 16107.
Move to approve section 6.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry. Now, say, I finally found the rules.
Well, they've been there all along.
Yeah, but I couldn't find them. They were...
Oh, you mean...
Move to reconsider.
Yeah, you know, you change your rule so you can move and reconsider.
Yeah.
Is here.
No, I do now, Mr. Chairman, have a number of other items that I want to bring up.
All right, let's call it so we can get through here. Don has a number of other items he wants to throw out.
As a result of going back through and doing some rechecking with some of our different articles and trying to make sure we don't have any inconsistencies among them, it's been difficult as we've gone along because we've had to take a fragmented approach, an article at a time, to keep track of each one. I don't think we have any glaring deficiencies here, but there are some that I think that I should have your views on. One, in reviewing the minutes with respect to forgery articles and our employee crimes, I'm not certain we've decided this question. And that is, it's an item we discussed, first of all, in the forgery article, the sections on possessing forgery instruments and devices and this type of thing. There was discussion at that time that we would eliminate certain sections of that article. With the thought in mind that it would be covered under a general section under employee crimes. Well, as it turned out, it wasn't covered under that general article, although it was discussed, and Professor Platt recommended that. This was not the approach that the subcommittee nor the commission took under employee crimes. So that means that except for those instances where maybe you can get them under an attempt, perhaps, you could say that possession of a certain kind of instrument was a substantial step. There are certain substantive offenses that we previously covered that are not covered now. And namely, we have one that was formerly Section 5 in forgery and related offenses, criminal possession of a forged instrument in the first degree. We had criminal possession of a forgery device. I think that's the only one. And criminal possession of a forged instrument in the second degree. Yeah. So there are two forged instruments crimes, first and second degree possession of a forgery device. Now, just so that I'm clear on what the wishes of the commission are on this, I wanted to bring this up. Now, the other one crime that was similarly affected or was discussed, although we didn't change it, was possession of burglar's tools. Now, we kept the section on that. Now, I don't feel strongly, and I'm not trying to urge this on the commission necessarily, but since we deleted it, anticipating it was going to be covered elsewhere, and I'm not sure that we have covered it elsewhere, and maybe George might speak on this, we might want to reinsert these sections in forgery.
Do I understand the same material? There is no
different
in court.
Except burglary. Okay. Burglary tools is one that's covered. But we talked about a general section called possessing of instruments of crime, I think is what the...
Talked about it at length and decided not to take that word.
So,
I move we have...
Well, Don,
okay,
what action on the part of the commission does that require?
Well, it would require a vote to amend our tentative draft number one of forgery and related offenses to replace the sections that were formally deleted by the commission. That would be section 4, section 5, and section 6, as it appeared in preliminary draft number 2.
So moved.
You've heard the motion.
Right.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried.
All right. And I would just grade them accordingly.
Yep.
Graded accordingly.
You're a good grader.
That's a good
graded
accordingly.
Okay. Beautiful.
What other little figures you got there? Paypal for us.
All right, the definitions we've taken care of. Okay, now this is, I think this is very important. Under shoplifting, now we've repealed, or we would repeal shoplifting as a separate substantive offense. It'd be treated as any other kind of theft, depending upon the value of the property. But there are some sections, or at least one section, as I recall, in chapter 164 that we may want to make a policy decision on.
You got my proxy token for this one, right?
And that is detention and interrogation of persons suspected of shoplifting. Reasonable cause is defense to action for false arrest. Now, this allows a peace officer to detain certain individuals who are suspected of shoplifting. Now,
also allows a store owner.
Yeah, right. And it exempts them. Exempts them from a civil or criminal action for slander, false arrest, false imprisonment, assault, battery, or wrongful detention based upon the detention and interrogation if such reasonable cause exists. It's a defense to it, in other words. It's a defense to any of those charges, either civil or criminal. Under shoplifting, now...
Shouldn't we...
No, we don't have.
Shouldn't we transfer that to the... That's essentially a statute which is passed to affect civil proceedings,
yeah.
Basically. Why don't we just transfer it over to maybe chapter 30, one of those appropriate chapters in the civil code, and tell the legislature we're doing it. If they want to do something about it, they can.
What's the statute number? 164.
Wouldn't there reference to a criminal? 164.392. Well, it says, where a peace officer, merchant, or merchant's employee with reasonable cause for believing that a person has committed the crime of shoplifting, he detains and interrogates him in regard thereto, and such person thereafter brings against the peace officer, etc., etc., a civil or criminal action for any of those crimes I mentioned. Reasonable cause is a defense if the detention and interrogation were done in a reasonable manner and for a reasonable time.
Well, do we have a false imprisonment or any kind of article in this code?
We don't have false imprisonment as a crime. No, we discussed it, but we decided not to have it.
But we're going to have, under our justification thing, we're going to have a lot more brought against officers.
That's where I think this belongs.
Because anytime they make an arrest now on a misinterpretation of law, they're in deep trouble.
But if you don't have a criminal charge that you can bring against the store detective, then it isn't important to retain this as a defense to a criminal charge.
Well,
and its only importance would be a defense to a civil charge, civil case.
Yeah.
In which event it ought to be thrown into the civil code.
Well, I think that's all right. I have no objection to that. But in order to flag this thing for the prosecutors and attorneys, certainly at least in a commentary, here we should show what has been done with this.
We recommend the transfer of other sections. The forest camp, forest code, and all that business. We recommend
the code.
Well, I so moved.
See, I was thinking not only of police officers, but the merchants particularly, are going to be interested in what happens in this area now, what they can do about detaining somebody in the store.
Well, there was a battle fought in the legislature over this, between the plaintiff's lawyers and the stores. And That's okay, they want to fight battles, that's fine.
But it should be retained somewhere.
Over in the civil code.
We're going to ask legislative council to place it in the appropriate place, appropriate chapter in the...
Well, yeah, I'll have to include this on our list of our disposition
right.
table of statutes to be amended or...
Is his suggestion satisfactory from your point of view?
Yes.
Well, is there a motion to that effect?
I so move.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry. What other tidbits do you have?
You got a sneaker in there?
No, I don't have any. No, I'm Mr. Chandler, after all these years. I have one over there, so I'll leave that for last.
There it is.
Now, we have contemplated, first of all, that this code is going to repeal. It will repeal everything in chapters 161 through 168 and two sections of chapter 169. So everything in there is going to go.
Right.
Now, we have one...
We have one problem.
No, it's not a major problem, but it's really a procedural matter, and that deals with what happens when a man enters a plea of guilty to murder. 163.130, conviction of murder on confession. If upon an indictment for murder, the defendant is convicted of some confession open court, the court shall hear the proof and determine the degree of murder and shall give judgment accordingly. Now,
we now only have one degree of murder.
We don't have any degrees of murder now.
We only have two cases brought to that. We've been tried for that far even in the last.
Oh, there's been quite a few.
Quite a few.
A lot.
Only years.
Quite a few.
That one where in Crookham's court where that kid stabbed that woman, that was recently.
Well, that was a jury trial.
Well, even if there are a few, the principle still remains. What is your recommendation or solution?
Well, I was wondering if you felt, even though we don't have degrees of murder, if you still think the court should hear the proof on a.
Manslaughter.
Confession. In other words, if the man pleads guilty to murder, do you still want to hear the proof as you would under this statute?
I think so.
No. He's got life sentence on him.
Well,
he doesn't need to hear the proof.
Doesn't the present statute authorize a determination by the court that that the crime is manslaughter?
Not really.
No.
Because it's pleads guilty to murder. First degree and second degree murder. And they're also death penalty.
You only have one classification, you don't need the statute.
I guess what do you call the death penalty?
What's in the constitutional limitations now on McCarthy and Boykin?
All right, Lee Johnson, you're interrupting the committee proceedings.
Lee, why don't you tell us, for all of us, this story? This is...
Now, Judge Byrne, what is your reaction?
I don't... I don't think you need to.
You'd actually have to know if the crime of murder had been committed before you'd accept the guilty plea.
Well, yeah, you have to bear this in mind. The only sensible way that you can legitimately accept a plea, at least I believe this is correct, is to have the man detail the circumstances of the event, and if the circumstances don't add up to all the material elements, I don't think there's any case that yet says that's constitutionally required, although the Boykin case comes fairly close to it.
Yeah, I can read Boykin and McCarthy together.
But I think, as a practical matter, most judges, I'm not sure all of them, most judges will have the man recite the circumstances of the event before they accept the plea.
Now, I should mention that when we get into the procedure, Now, the American Bar Association spent a lot of time in this area, and they formulated standards for guilty pleas. And
maybe the thing to do, Mr. Chairman, is this: Why don't we transfer it temporarily to, say, Chapter 135 or 136, bearing in mind that we're going to be reworking those chapters anyway.
Well, yeah, I know we ought to take the reference to a degree of murder out of there, but my question was whether it would be a good idea to still require the court to hear the proof on it because it was murder.
Because you think if the court didn't hear the proof, the court might feel that it's manslaughter and reject the plea. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Well, I think Judge Burns' suggestion is appropriate, and I also move.
Well, do you want the reference to degrees in there?
No.
Well,
that's considering manslaughter as a degree of murder, which it is.
No.
Just don't recall it. It sticks in my mind somewhere that there's one occasion that statute was ended up with a guy being found guilty of manslaughter.
Well, it says determine the degree of murder, what it says.
Manslaughter comes under a little separate subhead.
Why didn't we amend it?
Well,
and then we can reconsider it again.
What you could do is substitute homicide for murder and use it temporarily. Wouldn't that take care of it?
Well, why even do it temporarily as long as we're going to be going through the procedural and the next?
Because this will be repealed.
Yeah. So as long as we do not have degrees of murder now, during this time that we'd be working on the procedural code, let's just do without it until we get to that section.
Well, what is the court going to do? What is he going to require at that point? Do you want a statement from the defendant to what happened?
Well, I think, yes, I think that Frank is probably right that the system would operate without that provision because of the fact that the judges are very much aware now that they cannot simply accept a guilty plea to any crime, let alone murder. And that judges, especially in a murder case, would be very particular to make sure that murder has in fact been done.
Okay, then why don't we repeal it, stick a deal in saying this is why we're repealing it, just what we said here,
yeah.
And that we expect to pick up the whole ball of wax in procedure, and in the meantime, we know that judges in taking the pleas are going to get the whole kit and caboodle in it.
Yeah, I think that's good.
In those words, ball of wax, kit and caboodle.
Yeah, that's known as the kit and caboodle section of the commentary.
Okay, let's prop it out.
How do you spell caboodle?
The whole ball of wax.
All you have to do is want that in a minute.
Yeah.
The whole deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
The big overall picture.
Okay, and along with that, there is another, which is really a procedural or evidentiary section that's in our substantive code now under Chapter 165, and that's evidence admissible to prove forgery. And this is here again really procedural, and I felt that we wanted to keep it, we transferred over trial section.
Yeah, I think that's
much transfer from 136. I move we transfer it to 136.
Sometimes
okay.
The whole branch
talk
to
odd.
Okay.
Oh, question.
Or will you talk to the report?
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
Yeah.
Carry.
Very good. Now what else do you have?
Oh, you know, I'm glad.
That was a reconsideration of the vote on gun control.
I'm for it.
All right, now, this goes back to murder again now. Now, chapter one, section 136.610 provides the jury may find either a general verdict, cetera, et cetera. That's sub one. Sub two is the important part. Except as otherwise provided, the verdict of a trial jury in a criminal action shall be unanimous. Now, where it's provided otherwise is under the Oregon Constitution, Article 1, Section 11, in circuit court trials, that it requires a
11, 12 person jury, too.
Yeah, and requires a unanimous verdict for first degree murder. Now, we don't have first degree murder. So, my suggestion was, first of all, I think any court faced with this, looking at the way we define murder, would say, well, in view of the Oregon Constitution, this is still first degree murder. The effect of it's the same because you get life imprisonment, and we're not going to allow a 10-2 verdict on this. But if you want to nail it down, we could amend the procedural section, 136.610, to make it clear that we require a unanimous verdict for murder.
No, I don't think that. Let's leave something up to the judge's discretion.
Well, I don't think so. I think
3 years, we better leave things up to the prosecutor.
Please.
Well, got a policy question, don't we?
Is the new Constitution going to do anything about that?
No,
there's no change in that at all.
There are a few little changes in there, but that isn't one of them.
Well, I think that you see, one of the effects of this statute is that if you try a criminal case in circuit court with six people on the jury, which we do occasionally with DWI appeals and so on, technically it has to be an unanimous verdict. Whereas if you try, you have 12 on the jury, you only need 10 to convict. One of the ramifications is that if you can talk the defense lawyer into a six-man jury, then you got to talk him also into going for five out of six, because it doesn't make sense of it. But it seems to me, along with doing that, we ought to clean that up. Say that a verdict has to be unanimous in whatever we call first degree murder.
Just be murder.
In murder, and all other criminal actions.
5-6. There have been bills in the last, I don't know how many sessions, for a five-man verdict in a five-man, 5-1 in district courts.
Session was.
Well, I don't get a very clear picture of any circuit trial judge allowing a 10-2 verdict in a murder case anyway, but we're a little bit at odds with the Constitution there.
You can have a second case where they try 10-2, can't you?
Degree,
well, yeah, of course, we've given something in return for something. I mean, we've said in the fact that what's second degree now is murder, and we're punishing murder as life imprisonment.
So but we're saying that you got to have 12, have to be unanimous verdict. Mm-hmm. So as a practical matter, a lot of second degree cases now are going to come back as manslaughter verdicts.
Well, there won't be many second degree because they'll all go out into that manslaughter chute that's written.
But you keep joking.
Well, what do you want? A consensus from the commission as to,
yeah, if you felt, number one, it's a problem, and if you want me to propose an amendment to 136.610, or if you just want to mention it in the commentary, or that we intend
to. I don't think it's a practical problem.
Seems to me if you mention it briefly in the commentary, that's all you need.
Yeah.
What we now call murder
requires a unanimous verdict.
I don't think it should.
Oh, six is enough. I have a 12-man
jury. Does your motion embrace Judge Burns' suggestion as far as 5/6 of the jury in all other criminal cases is needed to convict?
I assume.
Well, we wouldn't want 5/6 on three.
Well, I can't see anything unique.
Those two.
There they are, right there.
Well, I'm not really.
Two basic special crimes.
I'm not really greatly.
I'm not worried about creating an adverse.
Well, let's limit it just to the unanimous hit insofar as murder is concerned. Is that okay, Don?
Aye.
The motion is to insert in the commentary an expression that since we've changed murder, the requirement is that there be a unanimous verdict in order to support a finding of guilty or innocent.
Well, either way.
Yeah, right. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No.
Frank? No.
I voted no.
Okay. And they're closely related matter to which we talked about a little bit yesterday, connection with murder, is the standards for parole eligibility. Now, Section 144.230 provides, as you know, a person convicted of murder in the first degree shall not be eligible for parole until he served at least 10 years of his sentence. And then two is no person serving a sentence for murder in the second degree is eligible until he served at least 7 years.
Then they both be repealed.
Yeah. We don't want to mess up our...
How can we make a motion that too?
Let me ask you this. Shouldn't the repeal be prospective only?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean,
if this code be adopted.
You've been convicted of murder under this code.
Yes. Yes.
In other words,
somebody
well, of course,
you.
We've taken care of that with
yeah,
our
that's right.
ability
we have
of provisions
yeah.
in our preliminary article. We've said that
it's taken care of.
If this doesn't pass, the previous law applies.
You've heard the motion.
The motion is so the legal section.
Motion is, Mrs. Carpenter, to delete both sections. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. You're dead and both. Okay.
We got a couple of left.